In her many best-selling books, linguist Deborah Tannen has deconstructed the way women talk to men, to their mothers, and to their sisters. In her latest, she focuses on the way women talk to their female friends and uncovers the patterns of communication and miscommunication that affect friendships at different points in their lives. You're the Only One I Can Tell, Inside the Language of Women's Friendships, is published by Ballantine Books. And longtime listeners may remember that Professor Tannen was a regular visitor to our show in the early 1990s before she moved away to another city. It is with great pleasure that I welcome her back to our show. Good to see you again.
And with great pleasure that I'm here and see you again. Thank you.
What does a linguist bring to shedding light on women's friendships that a sociologist or a psychologist can't?
It's the focus on talk. And talk is what really distinguishes women's friendships from friendships either women and men or friendships between men. And I do have to say right at the start, I always do when I talk about gender, that nothing is true of all women or all men. We're talking about patterns and tendencies. But I'll give you an example of a conversation that I think kind of captures how the role of talk is so important to women's friendships and different. So this was
actually... Wait, and different than if they were talking to their mothers or their sisters?
Oh, sorry. Thank you for clarifying. Different from conversations between men's friendships.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So would also hold for mothers, daughters, and sisters, which is why it's such a natural for me as a linguist to be studying these topics. But this was a conversation that a woman told me she had with her son. The son had recently graduated from college, was living in another city, and she asked him about a friend, you know, how's Mike? Because she knew him. Have you talked to him lately? Yeah, I talked to him yesterday. Well, how's he doing? I don't know. Well, how's his job? I don't know. How's his girlfriend? Don't know. Well, what did you talk about? We talked about football. Did you only talk about football? No. Soccer, too. So the, and this goes way back to the pattern that I talked about when I wrote You Just Didn't Understand all those years ago, that girls and women tend to talk is the glue that holds a relationship together, is what the way I used to put it. You have these images of little girls sitting and whispering, you know, that image of a little girl whispering in another girl's ear. Where boys, it's often the best friend is the one you do everything with. It's the activities that create that closeness.
Was there general agreement or the people you spoke to about the definition of friendship?
Yes. And what makes friendship so different from the other books that I wrote is that a very broad array of relationships can be called friends. So from people you see often to people you see rarely, someone that you have known since you were in kindergarten, someone that you just met who's in your book group. So it does cover a very broad range of relationships.
When you were choosing the 80 women you interviewed for this book, how wide a range did you cover in terms of age, education, race, ethnicity, where they live?
Yeah, great range. Ages from 9 to 97. So that was certainly a great range. And I did have African-Americans, Asian-Americans, gay, straight, trans. So there was a great range. But I didn't try to characterize groups as compared to another group. I just wanted a range of experience.
In terms of age, did you see consistency between girlfriends and women friends?
Well, first of all, a lot of women friends call their friends girlfriends.
Yeah.
But it was striking to me how similar patterns were. So at every age, people told me their closest friends are the ones they can reveal secrets to. Things like a good friend is someone who knows things about me that others don't. Or a 9-year-old. My really good friend, I can tell anything. I know she won't tell other people. But this other friend, if I tell her, she's going to go tell other people. So a lot of that was the same at every age.
So they would choose a friend based on the fact that this friend would keep the secret and the other one wouldn't?
Well, you learn over time.
Yeah. You could trust that person
more. You learn
more
over time. But this really struck me interesting. I interviewed quite a few women in their 80s and again in their 90s. One woman was telling me, this woman in her 90s, was telling me about her various friends. And about one friend, she said, you know, she's a fat closer friend. I wouldn't tell her about my children's problems. And then elsewhere in the conversation, she said about another friend, she is a fat closer friend. I wouldn't tell her what I had for dinner.
Really?
Yeah. And this is, I just love that.
That doesn't sound like a friend.
Well,
that's
I
an acquaintanceship.
No, this is someone you're close to is the person who cares about every little thing that happened to you. And it was something that people told me when I talked to them about mothers and daughters. So I think of the woman who said about her mother, why they're close, who else can I tell I got a good deal on toilet paper? It's somebody who cares about the little things in your life shows how much she cares about you.
What about the women who say that their best friend is their sister or their mother?
Absolutely.
Or their husband in some sense.
I did, and this was something that surprised me. I heard my husband is my best friend, my boyfriend is my best friend. Definitely heard that. And sisters and mothers and daughters as well. But
is it the same thing?
I think it means that's the person to whom I turn when something's bothering me. And I tell them what's bothering me, and I trust their comments about it. This is interesting, too. We often refer to the kinds of conversations you have with people you're close to, and again, it's women in particular, troubles talk. Mm-hmm. Something's bothering you, you want to talk about it. And there's that end-of-day conversation that's so classic. A woman tells a man about a problem. He tells her how she can fix it. They're both frustrated. This came from You Just Didn't Understand. It was like,
I think of it.
Yeah. And what was said at the time, and even by me, was he's looking to fix it because he wants to do something. She just wants to talk about it. She doesn't want a solution. I wouldn't put it that way now. I don't think that's really right. I don't think it's the case that she doesn't want a solution. She just doesn't want it right off the bat. Hmm. So the conversation with a woman friend might go, oh, this thing is bothering me. I had this upsetting conversation. And the friend might say, well, what happened? What did you say? And then what did he say? And then why do you think he said that? And then how did you feel when he said that? And then how did you respond? And after all these questions, she gathers the information she needs to know what advice to give.
And men don't do that?
Tend not to. And I have to say here, many things that, as I said at the beginning, nothing is true of all women and men. I have those kinds of conversations with my husband. He does also sometimes give me advice sooner than I want. But the key point there, I think, and I grew up in a family with two sisters, mother, and my father was the only man in the family. And he frequently would say, what do you girls find to talk about all the time? And, you know, back before cell phones, if you had a teenage daughter, you needed a second phone line because she'd come home from spending the day at school with her friend. They would talk all the way home. They'd get in their homes, pick up the phone, and continue the conversation.
I'm speaking with Deborah Tannen, whose latest book is You're the Only One I Can Tell, Inside the Language of Women's Friendships, published by Ballantine Books. This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. You mentioned cell phones, so that reminds me that communication has changed a lot these days. So are we seeing a difference between younger women and older women in terms of texting, emailing, the use of emojis, so we can go on and on and on, or even speaking on the phone, because when you speak on the phone, you hear the tone of voice. When you're writing something, that tone is lost and perhaps nuance is lost.
Absolutely. And I do have a chapter on social media. I've been teaching that at Georgetown for a number of years now. So I have lots of examples, many from my students. There are differences in age, just real quickly. Parents will often want to call on the phone. Kids often find it's actually rude to call. If you really must talk on the phone, you text and ask, is this a good time to talk? They won't even listen. Many won't even listen to their voicemail because it takes so long. I'll just call you back when I get a chance. There can be differences in use of punctuation. So, example from a student of mine, her mother sends a message, call me, period, now, period. The student thinks, the daughter thinks, boy, I'm really in hot water. That period means she's angry. It didn't mean it. It just meant it's the end of the sentence.
Which is people of a certain generation tend to do, put a period at the end of a sentence.
Exactly. And the funniest one is the three dots, dot, 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 which quite a few older people use to kind of mean and on and on and more. I'm not saying everything I have in mind here. And young people will hear it as undercutting what you said before. So if you tell your father what you got for a birthday present and he says, wow, dot, 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 that means that wasn't very impressive. Mm-hmm. Or I love you, dot,
it
dot,
dot.
It
has to be an exclamation point?
Girls in particular, more than boys, yes. Exclamation points, caps, repetition of letters, repetition of words.
This sounds like the President of the United States.
I don't think so.
Well, he uses exclamation points. He uses caps. He... repetition of letters.
Okay, but here's the difference, and there's lots of research on this, that girls in particular are using it to cement their close relationships with people they're close to, and they're sending texts and snapping selfies and sending pictures as a way of keeping that connection. And it's I think of it as an extension of that end-of-day conversation where you want to tell somebody everything that you've done so that you feel close. You just only now you don't have to wait till the end of the day.
And
you tell them as you go.
You could tell them through briefer interactions, a lot of briefer interactions rather than one nice long conversation.
Right. I think in general, new media, these social media ramp up forces, dynamics that have always been with us. So, yes, it's very well suited to creating these connections so you feel this person you're close to is with you all the day. It also ramps up a fear of being left out. When girls and women told me they were hurt by a friend, and it was the same by sisters, mothers, and daughters, often it was not being told something or being left out of something. And that really is not without basis, because girls and women do punish girls they don't like by locking them out.
So, and we see that with Facebook, where you can discover that you have not been included in a conversation.
Exactly. And I think that always was a risk. You'd hear about some party that you weren't invited to. You heard that your friends were together and you weren't there. Now you're seeing the picture, and that is so much more vivid, and your reaction is more immediate. And I do have to tell you this one funny line, because captures how girls do lock out girls they don't like. Boys won't. They will mistreat them, but they don't lock them out. So a colleague of mine, Amy Sheldon, has studied preschool kids, and she observed a little girl. They're playing house. You know, in preschool, you can't say you can't play. It's a rule. So here comes a girl that she doesn't like, but she allows her to play. She says, you can be the baby brother, but you aren't born yet. Very creative, giving her a non-speaking role.
Now, you mentioned that a large part of this is the exchange of secrets. Why has gossip gotten such a bad reputation then? And a way of putting down women.
Yeah. I think it's inseparable from the tendency of women to talk about personal things, which means your own things and other people's personal issues. So I think part of it is, if you're from the outside and you're not so inclined to talk about personal things, you're going to be critical of it. And the other is just the negative feeling toward women. But I make a distinction between talking about and talking against. The negative sense of gossip is associated with talking against. But so much of the talk that we do is not talking against, it's talking about. And Margaret Mead made this point. Cynthia Ozick made it in a recent essay. Being interested in people's lives is a kind of being alive, being interested in humanity. And a lot of gossip is just that, being interested in other people and what's happening. If you have siblings, for example, talking to your mother, you might say, oh, how's my brother? How's my sister? Or have you talked to so-and-so lately? Like the conversation I said at the beginning, that wasn't gossip in a bad sense. But it is a fear. And some women that I interviewed told me, I don't have women friends. I don't trust women. And often what they had in mind was gossip. If you tell her something personal, she might repeat it to somebody else. And I love this one. A woman told me that her mother had warned her, be very careful about giving personal information to anyone, a woman, who gets her hair done regularly or plays bridge. Because when she runs out of things about herself to say, she'll move on to talking about you.
There are also concerns about people being mean. Girls frequently criticize their friends by saying, you think you're smart or you think you're better than anyone else. You don't hear boys saying that all that often.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, and it is very heartbreaking. I heard many stories, painful stories. Often it was memories that women had from middle school and high school, but some were even when they were older, where a whole group of friends would suddenly turn on one of the girls in the group and eject her, lock her out. And I remember this one woman in particular telling me she still felt guilty because she had not stood up for that girl. And what she said was so significant to me. She said she really hadn't done anything to deserve it. She said she was really good at sports and cute, but she really was. Well, that's exactly the kind of thing that girls will often turn on a girl for, because among boys, if he's really good at sports and good-looking, his status goes up.
Were women critical when the two women marathon runners crossed the finish line at the Olympics while holding hands?
I love that. That was those two German identical twin sisters.
You can't imagine two men holding hands while running competitively, even if they are twins.
I love that. I love you're so right about that. So I was intrigued, this incident. They had run. It was not a matter of winning. They weren't going to win. But they crossed the finish line together holding hands. Great photo op. They were criticized by the German Sports Association because the interpretation was they weren't doing their best because they had one of them had to have slowed down to go together. And I quoted their own statements on it, and I use it as an example of how you really can't tell the difference often between competition and connection. So they said this, one of them explained, they had not been together, but they were nearing the finish line. She saw her sister ahead, and that just gave her this final, you know, find the energy to go beyond her capabilities, catch up to her, and finish together. Was that competition? She didn't want her sister to beat her, or was it connection? She wanted to do it together.
My guest is Deborah Tannen. Her latest book, her follow-up to her bestsellers, You Just Don't Understand, You're Wearing That, You Were Always Mom's Favorite, is You're the Only One I Can Tell, Inside the Language of Women's Friendships. It's published by Ballantine Books, and we will continue our conversation after this. And we are back with Deborah Tannen, whose latest book is You're the Only One I Can Tell, Inside the Language of Women's Friendships, published by Ballantine Books. And I mentioned earlier that you are teaching at Georgetown, and you talked about how you consulted your students on some of these things. Did they get all enthusiastic about this topic when you bring it up?
Well, everybody that I talk to, all of the women I talk to about friendship, always get all excited. I did interview a few about friendships in general, but the chapter on social media draws very much on examples that my students brought in.
What are some of the conscious and unconscious choices that determine our conversational styles?
Conversational style is something that I've been interested in from way before. In fact, you had me on the show talking about my work on New York versus California, conversational style, before the book You Just Don't Understand. And this comes up in friendships between women. If you have, and I'll give you a few examples, two women, good friends, they're walking around a lake, having a talk. One is telling the other about something that's bothering her. And she, the other one's listening, but she also is occasionally pointing out really nice things she sees. Oh, look at that duck gliding on the surface of the lake with the little ducklings behind her. And the first one gets upset. You're not listening to me. The fact that you're interjecting with observations means you're not paying attention. That's a conversational style difference. What I call high involvement style, which is typical of New Yorkers, although not all New Yorkers have this style. Interjections like that don't mean you're not listening. It just means I don't want to miss this moment to share this thing with you.
But even if the other one sticks to the topic, don't problems frequently arise when a woman thinks that it's her turn to speak, but her friend thinks that she's interrupting?
Well, the whole issue of interruption is not straightforward.
And you say that women interrupt each other more often than men, despite the fact that talk show hosts constantly are criticized for interrupting their women guests.
Yes, because just as I said, there's two different kinds of gossip, talking against and talking about. There are two different kinds of, you might say, conversational overlaps. There's the kind that shows enthusiasm, that shows I'm really listening to you. That's why I can't wait till you're finished. And the other is I'm taking the floor because I'm changing the subject. I'm not allowing you to finish. And one of the things I found in the conversational style of New Yorkers, and your listeners may have heard, I grew up in Brooklyn, we will often talk along as a way of showing enthusiasm. And we get the sense that somebody is done when there's a short pause. Other parts of the country, that length of pause doesn't mean they're done. They're just catching their breath. So anytime two people talk and have a different sense of how long a pause should be, the one who's expecting the shorter pause ends up interrupting. But they didn't mean to. They really thought you were done. There's so many other aspects like this. Asking personal questions as a way of showing interest. So you'll get a complaint, she never asked me anything. On the other hand, you might get a complaint, she's so nosy, she asked me all these personal questions. That's a conversational style difference. A woman told me she was quite hurt because she had told her friend that she had her mother was in the hospital. The friend never asked. We would think caring, you have to follow up by asking, how's your mother doing? So she talked to her friend about it, and the friend said, gee, you know, I was always taught it's rude to ask personal questions. So what was showing considerateness, not intruding by asking, was interpreted as lack of caring.
So that would be a high considerateness style as opposed to the high involvement style that you were talking about?
Yes. We all want to be considerate, and we all want to show we're involved. But a high involvement style puts the emphasis on it's more important to show you're involved. And the other puts more emphasis on leaving lots of space for the other person. Another difference here would be indirectness. So are you going to pick up hints about what the other person wants? And here's an example I got from a student that shows how it can be even harder with social media. So she had sent a text, Facebook message to a friend. They were planning to go running, and she said, how about if we go a bit later? And the friend replied, I guess that's okay. All right, see you then. Well, I guess okay sounds unenthusiastic. So she figured the friend doesn't really want to. Okay, we don't have to. And they ended up going back and forth four times.
That's over-interpreting, as far as I'm concerned.
No. Well, I think girls and women do it a lot because, first of all, we don't want to impose. We don't want to seem too demanding. And we don't want to hurt each other's feelings.
But you also write about indirectness, and that reminds me of the kinds of things we talked about when you wrote You Just Don't Understand.
That's right.
Here you have a case of, instead of saying, please close the window, a woman might say, isn't it cold in here?
It's just one of the things.
And I remember the old days, you talked about a couple driving down the road, and she says,
can I tell that one?
Yeah, sure.
I'm so thrilled you remember that. Yep, that was
of
way
course
back.
I remembered okay. it. I lived it.
That's a conversation where a woman turns to the man and says, are you thirsty, dear? Would you like to stop for a drink? And he isn't, so he says no. And
I'm not
then,
thirsty.
Later, it turns out that she had wanted to stop, and she's a little bit annoyed. And then he's annoyed. Why do you want me to be a mind reader? Why didn't you just tell me what you want? And my take on it was, it's not that she wanted to stop. It's that she wanted to start a negotiation about it. So if she said, are you thirsty? Would you like to stop for a drink? You might say, gee, I'm not, but if you want to stop, you can. Or you might say, do you mind? I'm tired. We could do it another time. What she didn't expect was a yes-no answer.
And then there are other examples that I've always loved. When are we expected at the party? We have to leave in 10 minutes.
Yeah, so people vary with how explicit they are and how much they depend on the other person to read between the lines. And in You Just Don't Understand, I talked about the tendency of women in that example of driving is shows that, where women are more inclined to be indirect because we are so attuned to not being demanding and taking the other person's preferences into account. On the other hand, my original work, which you had me on talking about, women and men in the New York area often are high involvement, don't use as much indirectness.
So if you were a psychologist, what advice would you give friends who have different conversational styles?
I think talking about it is really important. If you simply assume my way is the right way, there's no way out of it. You both are convinced that the other person is either disingenuous or nuts. And I ran into this myself very recently, and I'm the expert, right? And yet I didn't pick it up. So I'll just briefly, I had a friend over. It was dinner, and she had made dinner for me and my husband many times. I don't do it that often, so this is a big deal. She's a guest in my house. And she kept trying to help, and I really didn't want her to. And I kept saying, no, I don't want you to help. And then she'd be up again. At one point, she almost made it in the kitchen. I yanked her back, sit down. And I was really frustrated. Why was she not listening to me? If I had not been writing this book, I would have just let it go. But I wanted to know her perspective. So I brought it up and we talked about it. And we both felt that a light had been turned on in a dark room. In her family, she explained, her mother would say, I don't want you to help. And then she would do it anyway. And then eventually her mother would say, don't wash the dishes. And she'd wash them anyway. Don't clean up. She'd clean up anyway. And then her mother would say, thank you. Mm-hmm. And she said, in her family, don't help meant you shouldn't help because you're a guest. So I appreciate it all the more when you do. It never occurred to me that when I said that she might not think I meant it when I said I don't want you to help, it never occurred to her that I did.
I'm speaking with Deborah Tannen, whose latest book is You're the Only One I Can Tell, Inside the Language of Women's Friendships. You talk about a number of areas that can be rather fraught, the use of humor, talking about financial situations, children, politics. Are these different when women are doing it as opposed to men?
Not necessarily, but I think what is different, well, actually, this is a cultural thing as much as anything else, that many American women and men, I think, feel that it's not really appropriate to talk about politics, religion with somebody you don't know that well. And so they will often think that you're ignorant because you won't talk about it. And then there are others where that shows you're good enough friends that you can talk about
but
it.
But you assume if this person is your friend that you kind of agree on politics, for example. But that isn't always the case.
The whole issue of whether you should be the same is very interesting. And I have, again, a whole chapter on that. Many women immediately telling me about a friend would almost like a checklist tell me ways they're the same and ways they're different. And sometimes it was, that's why we're such good friends, because we're so similar. And sometimes it was, we really appreciated each other because we're so different. She gives me a different perspective. She shows me things that I wouldn't have thought. And this is really kind of ironic. One woman commented, the better friends you are, the less similarities you need to be close. She said she and her best friend called themselves yin and yang because they're so different. But just the longevity of the friendship creates closeness.
Well, I remember a woman complaining to me during the last presidential campaign about a very good friend who was kind of campaigning for one of the candidates to the point of annoyance. Now, the election is over. They remain good friends. But for a while, it was rather uncomfortable. Then you have situations where people talk about their children. Some think that they're bragging. Others think this is perfectly fine. After all, this is what friends do when they talk to each other.
You're reminding me again of this, the competition and connection often are done in the same words, and it's not always easy to know which is which. So a woman who lived in a senior residence told me it was very uncomfortable for her. Her children did have a lot of problems, and the other women were constantly talking about their children, and it was only braggable things. It was never problems. My grandson goes to Harvard, but not he had to drop out because he had a nervous breakdown. You only told the braggable things, and that can be uncomfortable.
Do many friendships end because of miscommunication?
Friendships often end. Something that fascinated me was cutoffs. Just as I said, women will sometimes, as a group, lock out a friend they don't like. It's not that unusual. Most of the women I talked to had the experience of being summarily cut off by a friend. And I tell in the book of my own experience with that when I was in high school. There were two girls and I, the three of us were inseparable. And one moment, this was Hunter College High School, so I lived in Brooklyn, taking the train up to Manhattan. So I didn't have other friends from my neighborhood at school. And then one day, one of the friends, her name was Susan, just stopped talking to me.
And still I still remember her name.
Well, I sure do. And and I had always wanted to find her and find out why. Marlene remained my friend, but I couldn't be friends with her at school because she was still friends with Susan, so I was isolated. And as soon as I decided to write this book, I made up my mind I was going to find her. I tried to find her many times over the years, never succeeded. I basically finished the book, and I got the help of someone who's really good at finding people online, and he was able to find her. And 54 years after our last conversation, I'm talking to her on the phone, and the first thing she said was, it had been her brother that made her stop talking to me because he felt I had too much influence over her. And I felt that was very significant because women who had been cut off often were asking themselves, what did I do wrong? And sometimes it really wasn't anything they did wrong.
We're pretty much out of time, but you write about a woman who was taking a medication that caused her hair to thin. And there's a concern. Do you talk about that or not? Or should you tell a friend something that she may need to hear, like her husband, boyfriend, or partner is cheating on her?
Yes, and so many women told me honesty is a very important thing among friends. However, it's not always clear when it's good to be honest because you also don't want to hurt each other's feelings, and sometimes you feel people need encouragement. So I very much talk about the ins and outs of those expectations.
So it sounds like everything is fraught.
Everything is fraught, especially if humans are involved.
The solution is to not have friends. Did the women did the women you speak to tend to have a certain number of friends, or did it vary a lot?
I want to say something here very important. Yeah, we're talking about a lot of the complications because that's how a book can be helpful, right, when you've got challenges. But I think you could give this book to your best friend and she would not take it as an indication you've got a problem. She would take it as a compliment. I have lots about what it is that makes those friendships so precious.
Deborah Tannen's latest book is You're the Only One I Can Tell, Inside the Language of Women's Friendships. It is published by Ballantine Books. And it's been a while since you visited us, although you probably were on the show 15 or 20 times in the past. Come back soon, okay?
What a pleasure to talk to you again. Thank you so much.